Welcome back, listeners. If you're hearing this, you made it through another week. Congratulations. Not everyone can say the same. Tonight's episode isn't about ghosts or demons or things that hide in the shadows. Tonight is about something far more terrifying: the human will to survive, and the unspeakable things we become when that will is tested. So turn off the lights, lock your doors, and whatever you do, don't think too hard about what you would do in their position. Because once you start down that road, there's no coming back. Let's begin. Story 1. I'm a software developer from Bangalore, 28 years old, and I hadn't taken a proper vacation in 3 years. My girlfriend Priya finally convinced me we needed to get away, somewhere quiet in the hills. That's how we ended up booking this cabin in Coorg through some obscure rental website. The place looked perfect in the photos. Traditional Kodava architecture, surrounded by coffee plantations, completely isolated. Exactly what we needed. We arrived on a Friday evening just as the sun was setting behind the western ghats. Our host, Mr. Sharma, was waiting outside. He was probably in his 60s, pleasant enough, showed us around the cabin with this fixed smile that never quite reached his eyes. I mean, some people are just like that, you know. The previous guest just checked out this morning, he said, handing over the keys. Lovely couple, much like yourselves. His cabin was about 50 meters away, partially hidden by coffee plants and pepper vines. Close enough to see, I noticed, but I didn't think much of it then. I should have. The cabin was nicer than expected. Wooden floors, a stone fireplace, large windows overlooking the valley. Priya immediately started unpacking while I explored. That's when I found the journal. It was tucked behind a loose floorboard near the bedroom closet. I'd only discovered it because I dropped my phone and it slid underneath. A brown leather notebook, fairly new. The first entry was dated exactly 1 week ago. Day 1, arrived at the cabin in Coorg. The drive from Bangalore took longer than expected. Host seems friendly, planning to visit Abbey Falls tomorrow. I frowned. We were planning to visit Abbey Falls tomorrow too. Obviously, it's a popular spot, I told myself. Coincidence. I kept reading. Day 2, hike to Abbey Falls. Priya suggested we try the local coffee at that small cafe in Madikeri, the one with the green awning. She loved their filter coffee. My stomach tightened. My Priya had mentioned that exact cafe this morning, the one she'd seen on Instagram. Same name and everything. What's that? Priya asked, coming into the room. Just some journal the previous guests left behind, I said, trying to sound casual. Weird that they have the same plans as us. She laughed. Babe, everyone who comes to Coorg does the same stuff. Don't be paranoid. Maybe she was right. I mean, there are only so many things to do in a small hill station, basically. But I couldn't stop reading. Day 3. Rained all day. Stayed in and played cards by the fireplace. Rahul made terrible jokes. I pretended to laugh. Rahul. That's my name. My heart started pounding harder. Day 4. Noticed Mr. Sharma watching our cabin from his window. Probably just checking if we need anything. Still feels strange. Rahul wants to try that restaurant in Virashpet tonight. The one that serves pandi curry. I hadn't told Priya about the restaurant yet. I'd only bookmarked it on Google Maps that afternoon. Priya, I said, my voice shaking slightly. Come look at this. She read over my shoulder. I watched her expression change from amused to confused to concerned. This is really weird, she whispered. Day 5, found a camera in the smoke detector, started looking around properly, They're everywhere. Behind picture frames, inside the wall clock, even one in the bathroom vent. 14 cameras total. Counted them twice. Mr. Sharma has been watching everything. We're leaving first thing tomorrow. Don't confront him. Don't let him know you know. The entry ended there. We just stood there, staring at each other. The cabin suddenly felt smaller, the shadows deeper. Check the smoke detector, Priya said. I pulled over a chair, unscrewed the cover with shaking hands. There it was, a tiny lens, barely visible, still blinking with a small red light. Oh God, Priya breathed. Oh God, Rahul. We found them everywhere. The journal had been right. 14 cameras in total. In the bedroom, living room, bathroom, all of them live. All of them recording. The one in the bathroom made me want to throw up. I looked out the window toward Mr. Sharma's cabin. A light was on. I could see him sitting there, laptop open, watching. When he noticed me looking, he didn't look away. He just smiled and waved. That's when I realized he knew we'd found the journal. He knew we'd found the cameras. This was part of it. The fear, the discovery, our reactions. He was watching all of it. Maybe the previous couple had never left. Maybe there were no previous guests at all. We need to leave. Right now, I said. Priya was already grabbing our bags. We didn't bother packing properly, just threw everything in. My hands were shaking so badly, I could barely grip my car keys. As we rushed toward the door, my phone buzzed, a text from an unknown number. The road washes out after heavy rain. You'll have to stay one more night. I looked outside. It had started raining. Not just raining, pouring. The kind of rain that turns dirt roads into rivers in the hills. Another text. Don't worry, I have everything you need. Through the window, I could see Mr. Sharma standing on his porch now, still watching, still smiling. He raised his phone and waved it at us. Screw the rain, I said. We're leaving. The drive down was terrifying. The road was already flooding, mud sliding onto the path. I drove too fast, hydroplaning around curves, Priya gripping the dashboard and praying under her breath. About halfway down, we lost cell service completely. The rain was so heavy, I could barely see. It took us 2 hours to reach the main road. 2 hours of checking the rearview mirror, expecting to see his car following us. But we made it. We drove straight through the night back to Bangalore. I didn't stop shaking until we reached our apartment building. And even then, I couldn't sleep. We filed a police report the next day, but when the local police went to investigate, they said the cabin was empty. Mr. Sharma was gone. No cameras, no laptop, no journal. The property records showed the cabin had been abandoned for 2 years. I still have nightmares about it. To this day, I check hotel rooms for cameras, cover my laptop webcam. Avoid rental properties completely. Priya and I broke up 3 months later. We couldn't look at each other without remembering. Sometimes I wonder about the journal, about the couple who supposedly wrote it, whether they existed at all, or if Mr. Sharma created it, predicting our exact movements based on everyone who came before us. Looking back, I realized the worst part wasn't the cameras. It was knowing that he'd been watching people for so long that he could predict exactly what they'd do, exactly what they'd say, exactly how they'd react when they found out. We were never unique. We were just another performance in his collection. I wish I had never found that journal. I wish I'd trusted my instincts when I first saw his smile. But mostly, I wish I knew whether he's still out there, watching someone else, writing in another journal about another couple who thinks they're on vacation. Because somewhere in India, there's a cabin in the hills, and someone just checked in. Story 2. I've been walking dogs in Camden for about 3 years now. It's decent money, honestly. And I like being outside instead of stuck in some office. I'm 24, dropped out of uni, and this pays my rent while I figure out what I actually want to do with my life. Most days are pretty routine. Pick up the keys, walk the dogs, return them tired and happy. Simple. Maple Street is part of my regular route. Narrow Victorian terraces. Those typical London houses all pressed together like books on a shelf. I walk it maybe 4-5 times a day with different dogs. And about 3 months ago, I started noticing something weird. The dogs wouldn't go past number 47. I mean, at first, I thought it was just Biscuit, this nervous whippet who's scared of everything. He stopped dead on the pavement outside, pulled backward, whimpering. Fair enough. Biscuit freaks out over bin bags. But then, it was Mabel, this massive German shepherd who doesn't fear anything. She dug her paws in and refused to move, staring at the house with her ears flat. Then Roger, then Luna, then every single dog I walked. Every single one. Looking back, I should have paid more attention to that. Dogs know things, you know. But I just figured maybe there was a cat they could smell, or another dog that had marked the territory, or something. I started crossing the street before we reached it, taking the longer way round. Problem solved, basically. Number 47 itself was nothing special. Dark red brick, windows that always seemed to have the curtains drawn. I'd never seen anyone come or go. The front garden was overgrown, full of weeds pushing through the cracked paving stones. One of those houses that just looks empty, forgotten. It was last Tuesday when everything changed. I'd finished my morning walks early, two cancellations, so I decided to grab coffee from the cafe on Maple Street. I walked down alone for once, no dogs pulling at lids, and I walked right past number 47 without thinking about it. My phone buzzed in my pocket. Then again, and again. I pulled it out and felt my heart sink. Notifications were flooding my screen. My photo storage was full, it said. That didn't make sense. I'd had loads of space that morning. I opened my camera roll. Photos, hundreds of them. Thousands, maybe. All downloading from somewhere, filling up my phone faster than I could scroll. My hands started shaking as I tried to make sense of what I was seeing. They were all of me. Me walking Biscuit, me with Mabel, me crossing the street with Roger and Luna together, me checking my phone, me tying my shoelace, me looking directly at the camera without knowing it. Every single photo was taken from inside number 47, through those curtained windows. I could see the fabric edge in some shots, the angle looking down from the first floor. Someone had been photographing me for months. Oh God, I whispered. My coffee cup slipped from my other hand, splashing across the pavement. I looked up at the house. The curtain in the front bedroom twitched. I should have run. Obviously, I should have just run. But I stood there frozen, watching as the curtain moved again, more deliberately this time. A hand pressed against the glass. Pale. Too pale, like something that hadn't seen sunlight in years. My phone buzzed again. A new photo appeared. It was me, right now, standing on the street holding my phone, coffee spreading around my feet, taken 2 seconds ago. Fuck, I said. And then I was running. I didn't look back, didn't stop until I reached the main road where there were people and cars and normal things. My heart was pounding so hard I thought I might be sick. I pulled up the photos again, hands trembling. There had to be thousands. I started scrolling back, looking at the dates. 3 months' worth, every single walk, every single day. Then I saw something that made my blood turn cold. In some of the photos, maybe one in every 20 or so, there was someone else. A shape in the background, always a bit blurred, always partially out of frame. Walking about 30 feet behind me, in every single shot where this figure appeared, I was alone. No dogs with me. Just me and whoever was following me on foot, while someone else photographed us both from the window. There were two of them. I reported it to the police that day. They went to number 47. The house was empty, they said. Had been for years, apparently. Owned by someone who died in 2019, still in probate. No signs of forced entry. No cameras, no equipment, nothing. But my phone was full of those photos. The police saw them, made copies, said they'd investigate. I don't know what they found. They stopped returning my calls after 2 weeks. I've moved my routes now. Don't walk in Camden anymore at all, actually. Working in Islington these days, different streets entirely. But the thing is, last week, my phone storage filled up again. New photos, just 5 this time. All taken from inside my flat. I haven't slept properly since. I mean, how can I? I've changed the locks twice. Checked every window, every door. There are no cameras. I've looked everywhere. But somehow, they're still watching. The dogs always knew. I wish I'd listened. To this day, I still walk past houses and watch how the dogs react. If they stop, if they pull away, if they refuse to go forward, I don't question it anymore. I just turn around. Because if the dogs won't go somewhere, there's usually a very good reason. Story 3. I'm a software developer in Bangalore, 28 years old, and I've always been a night owl. I mean, when you're debugging code until 2 a.m. anyway, why not hit the gym after? That's how I ended up at PowerFit 24/7 in Koramangala at 4 in the morning on a Tuesday. Looking back, I should have known something was wrong the moment I swiped my card and heard how loud the beep echoed in the empty building. The gym was dead silent except for the hum of the AC. I liked it that way. Honestly, no crowds, no waiting for equipment, no judgment. Just me, my playlist, and the mirrors. I started with bench press, like always. The gym had these massive mirrors covering the entire front wall. You know, the kind where you can watch your form from any angle. I was halfway through my second set when I noticed him, a guy, standing about 15 feet behind me. Matching my movements exactly. I paused mid-rep. He paused too. I lowered the bar. He lowered his arms. Maybe I was just seeing my own reflection weird, I muttered, sitting up. But when I turned around, the space behind me was completely empty. Just rows of treadmills collecting dust in the dim light. I felt my heart pound a little harder. I walked to where I'd seen him. Nothing. The floor wasn't even scuffed. I checked the locker room door, locked from the inside, just like I'd left it. Probably just tired, I said aloud. My voice sounded too small in all that space. I moved to the squat rack, shaking it off. About 10 minutes later, I was loading plates when I caught movement in the mirror again. The same figure, closer this time. Maybe 10 feet behind me now. He was doing squats, matching my rhythm perfectly. Down, pause, up, down, pause, up. I spun around fast enough to make myself dizzy. Nothing. I should have left right then. I know that now, but I didn't want to seem crazy, you know. I'd just renewed my annual membership. Besides, the rational part of my brain kept insisting it was the lighting. Or exhaustion, Or maybe the pre-workout was stronger than usual. I decided to do one more exercise, dumbbell curls, facing away from the mirrors this time. If I couldn't see them, I couldn't see him, right? Wrong. The gym had smaller mirrors mounted on the side walls too. Halfway through my set, I caught him in my peripheral vision. He was standing maybe 6 feet away now. Close enough that I could see details I wish I hadn't noticed. His workout clothes were identical to mine. Same black tank top. Same grey shorts. But his face. Something wasn't right about his face. The proportions were off, like a drawing someone had copied, but gotten slightly wrong. His eyes opened wider than they should. His smile stretched too far. And he was staring directly at me. Not at his own reflection, at me. Hello? My voice cracked. Is someone there? The figure in the mirror didn't respond. Just kept curling invisible dumbbells. Up, down, up, down. I dropped my weights. They hit the rubber floor with a loud thud that made me jump. I walked straight to the mirror, my hands shaking. I pressed my palm against the glass. It was cold. Solid. Just a normal mirror. But he was still there, standing right behind me now. So close, I should have felt his breath on my neck. I turned. Nothing. I turned back to the mirror. He was touching my shoulder. I felt it. I swear to God, I felt pressure on my shoulder, like fingers pressing into my muscle. But when I looked down, there was nothing there. No hand, no person. Just my own shoulder, completely untouched. That's when I ran. I didn't grab my bag, didn't log out, didn't even close the locker room door. I just ran for the exit, my footsteps echoing like gunshots. Behind me, I heard other footsteps, heavy, matching my pace exactly. The front door was locked. My heart dropped. I'd swiped in, obviously. But you needed to swipe out too. Security feature. My card was in my bag, in the locker room, where the footsteps were coming from. I spun around. The hallway was empty, but in the reflection of the glass door, I could see him, walking toward me, not rushing, just walking, like he had all the time in the world. Please, I whispered. Please, I don't. He lunged. I don't remember much after that. Just pain. Being thrown, or throwing myself, I guess, against the walls, the equipment, the mirrors, glass shattering, my shoulders slamming into the metal frame of the lat pull-down machine, the taste of blood in my mouth. I woke up in the hospital 6 hours later. The gym manager, Rajesh, was there. So were two cops. They showed me the security footage on a tablet. It showed me working out alone, completely alone. Then, around 4:47 a.m., I just started fighting, throwing myself against walls, punching the air, grabbing my own throat with both hands and squeezing. The doctors said it might have been a psychotic break. Lack of sleep, they said. Too much caffeine, stress. I let them believe that. It was easier than explaining. But I know what I saw. I felt those hands on me. I saw him getting closer, exercise by exercise, until there was nowhere left to run. I cancelled my membership. Haven't been back to any gym since. Now I work out at home, in my bedroom. No mirrors. I remove them all. To this day, I still can't look at my reflection for too long. Because sometimes, when I'm not paying attention, I see him standing behind me, a little closer each time. And one day, I know he'll be close enough to touch.